This episode of AVXL is recorded on July 21st, 2017. We're going to talk about what may be the best bargain ever in 4K televisions, some upgrades, a $10 over-the-air antenna, some entry-level portable audio players, Dolby is celebrating a little bit of something-something, and quite a bit more. All coming up on this episode of AVXL.
Testing, 1, 2, 3. All right. I'm not blowing anything out.
Ignorant weasels chewing on your soul. Ignorant weasels. Do you have speed?
Yeah.
Welcome to AVXL, your guide to the best in home theater gear and content, no matter what your budget is. I'm Patrick Norton.
Hi, I am Robert Herron.
And I am extremely excited.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, everybody.
Well, happens to be the day we're recording.
Yes. Yes, it is.
It is a good day.
What are you excited about today?
That it is Friday, actually, and I might actually have a moment this weekend to caught up on some things. So
that
will be the endless race to catch up.
The A's are still in the cellar.
Without a doubt. Yeah, my favorite team. right in last place.
They look good. MLB apps really set the standard, I think, for sports.
I've been doing a lot of streaming of MLB to a Chromecast, and that has its ups and downs when you're dealing with that particular piece of hardware, and it's really up to the app developer to give you the controls you may or may not want.
Are you talking about like glitches or compression artifacts?
If anything, the quality is excellent. It actually exceeds what I get out of my old PlayStation 3 that I switch back to every now and then just to do a little comparison. I'm using a Chromecast Ultra 4K output. Mm-hmm. The picture looks solid 720p-ish that I'm getting for a stream. But it's controls, like selecting different audio tracks, things that were very easy to do or more options, period, on, say, like the PlayStation or a game console platform with that app. It's just, I find a little more full-featured and less digging around. Although I finally discovered how to regain control of the Chromecast if the app, like, dumps you out of it. You just basically select the damn Chromecast again, and then it'll pull up those controls for it. So, anyway, it's not 100% smooth. I'm eyeballing a Roku upgrade, I think, in my near future, as far as like a standalone over the top box.
I've been pretty happy with the Roku in our house, the Roku 4. The video quality is excellent. It was the only way we could get Amazon Prime. And will be until such time as our friends at Apple, Amazon has to finish the app. Apple has to approve it, then it has to go up on the Apple Store. I got to say, in terms of video quality, the Roku is fantastic. In terms of performance, the high-end Rokus are fantastic.
Good.
And, you know, as you've probably heard me say way too many times, the headphone jack in the Roku remote is outstanding. But I may listen to more loud movies at 2 a.m. while the children are sleeping than you do.
So. I was also doing battle with a TV that was just glitching on me, too, at the time. All the inputs stopped working and could not select or switch anything. And generally, if you're having a crazy software problem like that with a TV, just unplug it from the wall. Let it totally power out.
Just walk away.
Oh,
walk away.
It fixed itself. But it's like a moment of, what the heck?
Oh, man.
And speaking of TVs, mm-hmm. I was doing a little digging around. I had a couple people asking me about over-the-air antennas and where to start. And the good folks over at Channel Master have a terrific guide that will take you through figuring out your specific scenario in terms of broadcast tower locations, mm-hmm. and even factoring in things like, are you living on the top floor of an apartment? Do you live in a bunker? What kind of antenna would be best for your particular application? And where they'll start you off at, if you happen to live in a relatively good area of reception, mm-hmm. would be their $10 flat antenna. It comes in black or white, but $10. And I hooked one of these up yesterday to my current TV and ran through the channel scan again, and it performed adequately. It's like one of those things you just kind of wish was included with today's TVs. It literally connects to that antenna jack on the back of everything labeled a television. You run in into your menus, select the broadcasting system or whatever they've labeled it, run the channel scan, and boom, you can get some pretty good stuff. But at $10, even if you find you don't use it, it's cheap enough to where you can give it to somebody or hook somebody up, and it's not like you're breaking the bank. And if you need a bigger, badder, greater antenna down the road, you can Channel Master actually lets you apply that $10 in that purchase to a better antenna for future.
That's pretty awesome.
You know, and they let you keep the old antenna too. So if you do need something with more oomph, they got you. But just that guide they have a terrific guide, and it just it lays it out in terms of figuring out what it is you need and what's going to give you the best performance. Mm-hmm. If you're fortunate enough to live in, say, within, say, 50, 60 miles of a broadcast.
And that's, that's one of the big things is, you know, the nearest city, whether or not there are hills between you or that
hills.
City, whether or not the city is all about hills. I mean, it's ironic. You can live in San Francisco, and if you're in the wrong neighborhood, you can get fewer antenna or fewer television options than if you're living on the other side of the bay from the television antenna that's in San Francisco, because San Francisco has so many hills.
Line of sight is key. If you're fortunate enough to be able to see the broadcast towers or a clear shot in that general direction, generally an antenna like this will give you free over-the-air HD digital television. Mm-hmm. You're not recording anything with TVs, tuners, per se,
right.
But you can always, if you wanted a DVR for over-the-air, Channel Master does have a great one. Their DVR Plus, I've reviewed that before, but there's a few options out there for something like that.
Spending some quality time on TVFool.com or AntennaWeb.org are two great options that will let you know what's in your area and what it's going to take to get what's in your area.
But the nice thing with these $10 antennas too, just to see if it's even going to pull in anything, they're so thin and easy to work with. You can literally stick it to the wall behind the TV or even stick it to the TV itself. It's just simple. A simple way to give it a shot without straining the budget too much.
And depending on how you value your time, you may want to just buy the antenna, you know, hold it up in different directions and do the scan rather than spending the quality time on AntennaWeb.org or TVFool.com. It may be a more equitable return on your time investment.
For those two channels that come from a different direction that always give me trouble, that's what I end up doing.
Yeah.
Pretty much. So,
man, one of the things we really enjoyed hearing at CES was Emotiva's T2 speakers, which are finally shipping, right? We saw them back at CES 2017, and they're very, very similar to the Emotiva T1 speakers, except they're bigger.
Awesome.
I'm pretty sure they both have the same AirMotive tweeter, which is Emotiva's variation on an AirMotion transformer. We've talked about these before. They're the tweeters that look like they're sort of a yellowish folded fabric, usually a pale beige or yellowish fabric.
Exactly. They offer wider dispersion compared to regular dome tweeters. And it was a technology that was patented for a long time, I believe.
The first speakers that came out with these were way back in 1972.
Forget who it was that invented it.
Dr. Heil.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
And now that it's off patent, I've noticed even people building their own speakers. They'll use those as the tweeter a little wider, a little less directional compared to your regular dome tweeters. So,
well, yeah, I mean, you can go to Matasound or Parts Express. Here, let me do a search for Parts Express.
Dayton Audio. Always on their website. Look at it. Driver units.
Air Motion tweeter. This should be highly amusing. Here we go. Oh, yeah. The Dayton Audio AMT 2-4 Air Motion Tweeter, the Dayton Audio AMT-3. I mean, there's a ton of options on there.
Excellent.
Aurum Cantus AST 3001 Aerostriction Tweeter. I mean, they're all the basic, they're all basically the same technology.
But that's a component I used to associate, and it was for a long time, only in the most premium designs I was seeing. So it's great to see that kind of technology making its way down.
If you go to Matasound, they've got Tian Li, Mundorf. The Mundorf does some really cool stuff. In any case, we were talking, though, about these Emotiva speakers.
Yes.
And if you want to geek out on air motion transformers, a dipole driver with an extraordinary rapid response rate enabled by the extremely low mass of the polyester driver and the far smaller distance it travels in each swing compared to a dynamic driver. In this technical respect, it shares characteristics with the electrostatic driver.
It jiggles nicely.
Yeah, it's basically a way of saying it moves really fast, which gives you that attack and decay rate that can make the supercritical high-end components in an audio presentation, whether you're talking about music or home theater, sound really, really fantastic. So in the T2s, they pair that with a couple of 8-inch
woven fiber cones.
The cone.
Yeah, the T1 has 2 6-inch cones. The T8 has 2 8-inch cones. So it's not like you're going down to 20 hertz with the 8-inch cones.
Right.
But you're going down a couple dB lower with a bit more authority, and it's a bit more efficient in the sense of it's got more slam or impact, and I mean that in a positive way.
When we toured Emotiva's booth at CES, mm-hmm. or the room they had, it was one of the few times I've ever just walked in, and for one, if I was ever going to go with one company to do the amp, the speakers, do it all,
yeah.
that was like the room suddenly, it's like, I just want your stuff. Everything is like, you guys just do it kind of the way I want it done.
Yeah, and they do. I mean, they do nice.
At prices that weren't outrageous. So.
It's also funny, like, I've never been to one, but they also have the Emo Fest, which is for, you know, Emotiva consumers.
That's what you were talking
That's
about.
What I was talking okay. about. What, do you think I was going to be like, oh.
I was like, this is a side I haven't seen.
Let's fire up Dashboard Confessional, man. Not that I love Dashboard Confessional, but, you know, it's a little more emo for daily listening.
Right.
But emo in the musical sense. But, yeah, they do cool. They do it like a tech day on Saturday and an open house, you know,
nice.
Day on Sunday. But they've experimented with dealers, and they basically decided we want to sell directly. We want to sell at the best possible price. Matter of fact, they recently decided that they weren't going to do sale prices on stuff because that compromised their ability to deliver the lowest price on every day. So, cool company. We've met the president, you know, and I've handled the products and I've heard the products. There's some really fantastic stuff going on there. I'm going to politely ask if they'll let us review the TA100 preamp / DAC / tuner / integrated amp we got paws on at CES. Because it's $400 and it has excellent build quality. It's like 50 watts into 8 ohm, 90 watts into 4 ohm at an elevated distortion, but something that's probably not going to bother you unless you turn it up to 11. You know, and it reminds me of the ATI amplifiers I use, because it's got they put money in the transformer and the build. There's big giant heat sinks. There's a whole bunch of copper inside of this thing. There's really, really amazing layout. It's really impressive when you take the lid off of one of these and take a look inside. And I enjoy a well-built product because they tend to last forever, and I'm big into things lasting forever because I'm cheap, despite the fact that I want to spend a lot of money on headphones and speakers.
The affordability of their gear plus the quality of its build. Yeah. Those were the two things that just stuck out to me more than anything.
Oh, my goodness. So we were – the other thing that was coming up you were talking about Dolby's 100th Dolby Cinema has opened and released itself upon the planet.
I believe this is just in the United States, too. This will be the 100th theater opened in the U.S. There are currently 325 Dolby Cinema sites installed or committed to being installed around the world. If you have one of these theaters within reach, do yourself a favor. The benefits of Dolby Cinema using RGB laser projectors, mm-hmm. versus the old lamp-style theaters is a nearly perfect black level, inky dark black, to the point where it looks just pitch black in the room, which is great. Mm-hmm. And double the effect of brightness. So not only is it doing a darker black level, you're getting brighter peak details compared to those lamp-based systems. And congratulations on the number 100. we have a couple of them now in the Bay Area. The 100th one apparently was installed down in Redondo Beach at an AMC theater, which seems to be of all the theater chains I run across, they're ones who are very, very big proponents of the Dolby Cinema technology. So
I will say, but part of the reason we started doing HD Nation back in the day was because, A, we got so many questions about home theater and flat panels because there was so much confusion around LCD and planar magnetic LCD and plasma,
yeah.
Technology. And it was such a significant investment. People wanted to get it right. But also, we were both so incredibly frustrated with how crappy the theater experience had gotten at that point.
Our scattergun. There was very little consistency. There might be one good theater in the theater you go to, but maybe it's not showing what you want to show, or if you're fortunate. Yeah. that's our best case scenario.
Our local theater in Alameda is fun, and they did a really, really good job on the theater itself. It's just like Art Deco magnificence. But there's also a couple of really fantastic theaters where they have, you know, Dolby Cinema going on, and they have the
amazing digital transition started getting me to at least pay attention to theaters again when it went through 720 DLP right. to 1080 to 4K now, and now with laser and high contrast,
yeah,
super saturated color.
Not that I've, I mean, I've been to, a, I think I went to a theater for the first time in like
audio
six
too.
Or 7 years about a year ago. And the thing that struck me was like, hey, the audio wasn't atrocious. And B, you know, the image was in focus.
little things, man. Little things. And speaking of other events related to theater, we previewed Samsung's tiled LED display tech at CES a couple of years ago. They were just showing this as a demo. They didn't really talk much about it. They didn't want anybody getting up close to it. But effectively, they're like 1 foot by 1 foot panels that can be tiled to whatever size display you want. They weren't really talking much about anything in terms of what they're going to do with them. But lo and behold, a couple months ago, they demonstrated a theater configuration at one of the, I want to say TheaterCon or CinemaCon, I believe it was. And now, dun, 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 they've actually installed one of these cinema LED systems in the Super S Theater in the Lotte Cinema World World Tower in South Korea. So on their home turf, they've got one of these theaters installed. The things that jump out at me on a, what I believe it's like a 34-foot screen across, 4K, full 4K resolution, the 4096 by 2160, peak brightness, 500 nits. So what we were just talking about in terms of Dolby Cinema with dual RGB laser projectors, they're hitting over 100 nits.
Whoa.
That's already double what the lamp-based systems were doing. Mm-hmm. Now, with this LED tile technology from Samsung, they're now going to be able to create 500-nit displays within the theater environment. That's pretty bright. DCI color, of course. Interestingly, as you can probably guess, a tiled display system that's kind of thick is not acoustically transparent. So they're using something called a sculpted surround sound system with JBL speakers, and they effectively border the, at least for the speakers that would normally be behind the screen, in this case, they border them along the edge of the display, and then apparently they're able to create pretty effective phantom images anywhere on that screen surface in order to make it seem like there is sound coming from a specific spot. But
interesting.
Again, with that LED, when those LEDs turn off, it's pure black. So you're not dealing with things like projection distortions or lens distortions of any kind, especially at the edges of the picture. This can't be cheap, but this should offer some of the best image quality performance in large format displays. And I can't wait to see it. I think that's going to be next time I'm in South Korea, that's I'll stop in and check it out and give you my take on it. I really do hope they bring at least one theater set up to the U.S. here before the end of the year.
Oh, my goodness. We wait with bated breath. Wirecutter is the new best TV for most people. And the irony being that the best 4K TV for most people is only a couple $100 more expensive than the cheap 4K TV pick. But you know, and we're down with it. It's TCL's 55P607, the 55-inch version. Quote, as the best for most people because it's the best value we've ever seen in a TV. It produces images with more detail, brightness, and color than most TVs that cost hundreds more. Even when viewed side by side with a TV that costs 250% more, our viewing panel picked the TCL. And, you know, it's because it's a fantastic freaking value.
Yeah. Got all the right things.
$650 from Amazon. They have the 55P605 is $600 from Best Buy, but it has the crap IR remote, infrared remote. And, of course, it is now completely, now that, you know, we've talked about it, now that Wirecutter's put it up as their best pick, it is now completely sold out at Amazon for the next
Everyone who gets a hold of this P-Series from TCL gives it a great review. I haven't seen a bad review of this TV yet. So that's like four or five reviews in a row now. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely one to keep your eye on. I also saw that the folks over at, oh, give me a minute, they ended up putting up the new, I want to say the P-Series from Vizio as well as one of the best TVs for this year in terms of performance and price.
It's pretty good stuff.
These full array local dimming LCDs are among my favorites as far as, and getting that technology to a lower price point's nice.
The 65-inch version, which is what I would recommend if you have the money, just because, you know, you think 55 is a huge TV, but really 65 is much better in a room of any size, especially at 4K, because you can get so close to 4K. Or you need to get so close to 4K before you can really appreciate a lot of
it. No, and if you're watching it, like regular content too, off of broadcast television, you know, you don't... It'll look a little bit better because the screen's a little smaller. So
okay, so maybe you should wait for the 55-inch television. But I, you know, again, I've got a projector.
Go big.
Go big. Go big or go home. Oh, good. I thought we were changing our rule. Oh, no. I was really scared for a second.
No. These TVs are also super lightweight, too, for hanging or wall mounting or anything like that.
The 65-inch version is 1.5 times as much. It's like, you know, almost $1,100. For the 65 version of that P-Series from TCL. I think it's worth pointing out that it is easy to get confused with TCL's lineup because they have three lineups with 4K options. The P series, which is picture performance, which is, you know, HDR10 Dolby Vision compatible, and that does the 72 zone direct backlighting, which is a big deal in a $650 or $1,000 television. You know, the thing that amused me is I don't think we've talked about the NBP Photon or TCL's NBP Photon technology, quotes, adding another vivid chromatic dimension on top of the striking HDR contrast and sharp 4K resolution to deliver a remarkable visual experience and covers nearly all of the DCI P3 color standard. It's very breathy marketing. So NBP Photon to me sounds like some sort of, you know, what were we talking about last week?
What, quantum dot?
Yeah.
That's a good question, actually.
Nobody really knows what it is, but it's in the P-series and it's in the C-series.
It's phosphor. Enhanced phosphor LED is what I would guess. There are some designs out there that incorporate, I think GE is doing some of the best ones right now, in terms of incorporating something that could do a very deep, rich red. That was always a hard point. You look at any old LCD TV, and the reds were always pinkish. They weren't really rich at all. Very undersaturated.
Right.
And that is what technologies like Quantum Dot or these enhanced LED systems that can create this robust white light that gets refiltered. Listen to the last episode if you want to get a whole rundown on all the things related to how to improve picture quality there.
Yeah, that's
but
a good
the
conversation.
What was interesting to me was the S series. Apparently, it doesn't have Dolby Vision, but otherwise, the similar color performance, it does have HDR10, but it'll use edge lit. And it saves you a couple bucks, but
it's funny because the top of the line television series from TCL now is what they call their C series or contemporary design, which sounds exactly like the P series, except it doesn't have
full array.
Yeah, full array. It's edge lit, so that gives them like a very thin screen or
very OLED-like.
A OLED-like screen, except it still has the big boxy section behind the lower half of the monitor. So
just about every TV does, though,
yeah,
except for the wallpaper.
Yeah, in this case, but it's frustrating, right? Because you're paying $50 more than the P series, and most of the monitor is skinnier, and you give up the backlighting, so you reduce the image quality, but you still have the big thick bottom half of the screen. So what's the delete expletive point of doing a skinny screen if it's only half of the screen is most of the screen, but you.
Fewer components, less material going into it, fewer LEDs. It likely isn't as bright.
So pay $50 more, reduce image quality. No. So, there's nothing wrong.
Style versus substance. Yeah.
And then there's like the S series, the Smart Value series, which is HDR10, is not supporting Dolby Vision, doesn't have the direct backlighting, doesn't have NBP Photon, and starts at $500 for 55 inches. But there's a big difference. That $150 it takes you from the S series to the P series, you get a lot of image quality out of that. So
if you could swing the P series, go there.
Yeah. Spend the extra $200, extra $150, $200 on that one. But I thought it was interesting that if you're not paying attention, there are several 55-inch or 65-inch TCL 2017 4K television options, but you are getting a radically different image experience for the money.
So totally.
Shop carefully.
And speaking of other good LCD televisions that popped up this week in review land, Ratings, or the Ratings website, actually reviewed the MU9000. That's Samsung's one step back from their QLED line. And this TV has superb native contrast. Black is black, and it's excellent looking, at least straight on. Of course, you move off axis, and you lose your contrast a little bit on all LCDs, at least most of them. Low lag, $1,900 on sale for the 65-inch version of this. And the MU9000 and the MU8000, I believe, as well, they both feature the same anti-reflective layer used on the QLED panels. And that is receiving a lot of notice, I've noticed. In terms of the reviewers going, you know what, this is the first time I've seen anti-reflective coatings on these TVs that seem to be doing a really good job. And at that price point, it's kind of interesting. Not using quantum dots in the Samsung MU9000, likely using an enhanced LED, but still reaching 1,000 nits, DCI color. I would say if you're looking for an alternative, that X900E from Sony, the 55-inch, I believe, starts at $1,400. The 65-inch is, I want to say, $1,900, or just about $2,000. And that puts it just like $100 or $200 above what the MU9000 is right now on sale. So still, for the price point and for the review they came through on, that looks like a great alternative. The MU9000, Sony's X900E, those are like, oh, I just, yeah. As far as great edge lit TVs go, those are some of the best LCDs you're going to find at that for the money. You can always spend more, but you're getting into a level of picture performance at that point.
LG C7 OLED. I like what Chris quoted in Chris wrote in the Wirecutter pick. That's their, if you're a videophile, you want the best picture quality out there. Quote, everyone from video experts to your complete video novice could see the differences when I placed an OLED and the TCL side by side. So
that is true. And it is. And
you know, you're paying almost five times as much, but well, six times as much. You're paying more than six times as much.
Truly. And that $3,800 price point, I think they mentioned for the C7 OLED 65 inch, that's about $500 higher than it has been this year, like even a couple weeks ago. So keep an eye on your pricing before you shop.
CamelCamelCamel.com.
That can help.
Oh, goodness. I got an interesting question on tech then this week about a gentleman that needed to upgrade his USB Wi-Fi adapter because there was no proper Windows 10 support for the driver. Oh. And it led me to a black hole of network testing using iPerf and the sudden discovery network or Wi-Fi throughput performance can not only be, you know, something we know is moving your router or moving your antenna on your PC or your home theater PC can make a radical difference in throughput. But it also turns out that drivers had more of an impact on performance than I would have expected. Because if you, for example, with this particular Asus driver, if you pick the global driver instead of the US driver, it made a significant reduction in performance. And if you used the updated driver that Windows 10 was trying to force onto you, it would give you an even worse performance. So if you're having issues, you know, or looking for more performance, you might want to try different drivers and see what it does to the speed of your device. This is, you know,
I was dealing with something very similar to this last night. I have a PC Wi-Fi card in my system, and it's AC, blah, 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 latest tech. Superb performance. But I just happened to notice after some of these Windows 10 updates lately, the reporting of install sizes, I think, is corrupted or corrupting certain things, or it's simply not showing sizes. It was showing my Wi-Fi driver was being reported as 47 gigabytes.
That seems like, excessive.
It did. So I went off in search of an updated driver, and just assuming that was probably not 100% legit in terms of size reporting. But it's kind of a mess right now. I had to basically disable some Windows security function to install a beta driver just to get this thing rolling, and everything seems fine now, but I was just like, it's iffy. And then today, I noticed my VPN program's no longer Windows 10 compatible for some reason, even though it worked just fine yesterday. So
I don't even know where to go with that.
Yeah, networking.
Something to think about if
hardwire rules.
You know, if you're having issues with your Roku or your Apple TV or your television, and you have the ability to move that device or relocate that device, because you know it was amazing for me when I was looking at, you know, if I have an antenna, which I have since semi-permanently attached to the top of my monitor, when the antenna fell behind the monitor, right, you're getting like just under 4 megabits per second, which is atrocious. With the antenna on top of the monitor, I was getting 70 megabits per second. With the wrong Windows 10 driver, with the driver Windows 10 wanted me to use, I was getting 36 megabits per second. And, you know, similar stuff, you know, going to a MIMO
a more recent 802.11ac top of the line USB adapter got me up to 161 megabits per second at the far corner of my house. If I brought it into the same room as the router, it got me up to 338 megabits per second, which is still slower than I think it should be, but a vast improvement over 161. Not that you'll ever need that to stream video, even 4K. But let me put something into perspective. We talk a lot of the time about why I have Ethernet to my Roku, to my Apple TV, to whatever set box test I'm running, to my Blu-ray player. When I was looking at that corner of my house, it was like 70 megabits per second with the AC, the 802.11 Wi-Fi on board. And when I went to a fancier adapter, I doubled that to 161 megabits per second, or 161.5. And like I mentioned a second ago, when I basically hacked the benchmark by putting the router next to the antenna, I got that up to 338 megabits per second. This all sounds really awesome, but when I connected Ethernet up anywhere in the house, I get 810 megabits per second off my gigabit Ethernet. I don't have to worry about the antenna being knocked down. I don't have to worry about my spouse creature relocating a device and suddenly it falling off of the network. I don't have to worry about the kids I don't have to worry about the cat suddenly becoming the thing that absorbs the Wi-Fi. If you can hardwire your devices in your house, you will have almost invariably, unless for some reason your switch dies or your router dies, no longer have issues with Wi-Fi because you will not be using Wi-Fi. So if you want the best possible experience with your streaming audio or your streaming video, put a cable in it. I'm just saying.
Totally.
that's our AV 101 for the week.
Yeah,
I'll
throw it out there and also say that if you can't actually run a hard wire, you can get something like a power line adapter.
Yeah.
And those aren't the be-all, end-all either. They have their own issues. But
especially if you have very peculiar wiring in your house.
You can sustain about half the bandwidth of your system through one of those power line connectors. And it works great. And it's pretty easy to do. And they're affordable.
I should point out, you don't need 800 megabits per second to stream 1080p or even 4K video.
Oh no!
But it's nice to have, it's nice to have more on tap than you can use. If you're looking for performance, also, if you can't get your Wi-Fi router in the center of your house, and you're thinking like I need one of those mesh routers, you probably don't. But if you do, Netgear's Orbi by far has the best overall performance. It's not a mesh router.
Okay.
In the strict definition of mesh, what they basically decided is we're going to create this incredibly badass 5 gigahertz, multi-antenna wired network that goes between each of our devices. And that's going to be the backhaul for everything. And then each of our devices is going to have the equivalent of a full router inside of it. If you want the best performance out of a mesh network,
they're
a little bigger than, say, an Eero device. They don't have... Actually, they do have the Ethernet jacks, but...
I use the Amplify HD at home, and...
It's good.
It works great.
Yeah, this one will outperform the Amplify HD. The Amplify HD is nice because it has the little... you can plug each of the remote mesh devices into a wall socket in your house.
So they've been doing a lot of updates on the firmware, too, for their products this year. So.
All of them are. Yeah. And Eero actually is about... It just launched their 2.0 version, which isn't any faster, but it's supposed to be a little more robust.
Amplify also added an app now, too, so you can do remote administration for their devices. And that, it's nice if you're dealing with a friend or a family member who's not in the household and you'd like to help them out or check their system. That was something I appreciate with the Amplify software.
Oh, my goodness. Next week, we're going to talk. Well, we'll do this one this week. Terrence tweeted, hey, at Patrick Norton, I was wondering if you could recommend a good MP3 player in DAC. I'm still sporting a SansaClip Zipra 8GB running Rockbox, which is so awesomely old school.
Wow.
And he attached an awesome picture of a Sansa MP3 player. Dude, the worm has definitely turned for you, my friend. Because if you have a decent pair of headphones, there are some... Not to slag the Sansa, but I mean, one, I can only hope the MP3s in that Sansa are like 256K or higher. Or, better yet, it's time to move your life to FLAC.
Go to FLAC!
Which is overkill, especially on mobile, but we're into overkill.
The hardest part is just transferring everything onto the phone.
Yeah.
Or those micro SD cards.
Well, and you know, or if you're like me and you've got like 900 CDs, you've got that sort of commitment to re-ripping everything.
Picking and choosing which. I'm not putting the whole collection on the phone.
Oh, my goodness. Look, if you have an iPhone, your phone is probably a really, really good alternative to that Sansa clip. I just want to say that. iPhone, you know, yes, if you're an audiophile, I completely understand that sniffing noise I can hear over the internet right now. But this is just not a superior audio experience. And it's like, I got it. You got planar magnetics. They're hard to drive. You're, you know, a hoopy frood. You want native FLAC support, in which case the iPhone is a wicked pain in the ass. You know, the iPod Touch still do a pretty good job playing music, but I think they're just too much for the amount of storage you get unless you desperately want to play games and watch movies at the same time. One of my favorites, I'm still running Astell & Kern's very, very first, you know, HD audio player, the AK100. Love their build quality. The current entry-level AK player is the AK Junior. It's $250. The top-of-the-line Astell & Kern player is the AK380 stainless package, which is literally, they did one carved out of copper, which is one of the most beautiful things I've never needed in my life.
Yep.
That I've ever gotten my paws on. Literally, it was like, you know, a giant. It was sure. Lots of copper.
It looks like it.
It didn't look like it. Didn't feel like it was copper. Now they have a basically they've carved an MP3 player into a chunk of stainless steel that costs a heart stopping $4,999.
Yeah.
So that's a little more.
I like it.
Yeah, great. You'll pay for
AK Junior. That's where I'm starting.
Yeah, AK Junior could probably start. I also want to say.
AK Junior still supports like external storage. Can you put like a SD card in it?
And that's the flack one of the nice up. Things. The AK Junior. Another one worth looking at is Fios X1. We had a question a while back where somebody's like, "How you know it's $99? Is it crap?" And I bought one and I kept it because it's actually pretty good. The thing about the AK Junior or the Fios X1, right? They're not running Android. They won't do streaming Tidal or any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, the menus are a little analog in the sense that you have to figure out what everything means and then do it their way. Not a lot of adjustment there, and they're not as fast as the more expensive players. But you know, the Fios X1 sounds great for everything, but the most power sucking headphones. They now have a second gen version that's also sells for about $100. My understanding is it should have faster navigation than the X1. In my experience, it has very similar, you know, in terms of the you know, audio quality and the amplification, it's very, very similar to the X1. I wouldn't like replace a first gen X1 with a second gen X1. Bluetooth streaming from the X1, for example, if you want to stream your Bluetooth, stream music over Bluetooth to your car's audio system, people either have said it's been fantastic or atrocious.
Gotcha.
So, you know, so the reviews on that reflect that experience. But, AK Junior, $250, that's a fantastic audio player. Fios X1 is a fantastic audio player. You know, if you have an iPhone, generally speaking, the iPhone output is very, very good for a cell phone.
Heck yeah.
There are some cell phones with dedicated audio amplifiers, but I'm not sure I want you to go out and buy a $700 cell phone for the audio section on it.
Is AK Junior light enough to, like, carry with you, like running or exercising and things like that? Or would
but you know, I'm also a 235 pound, you know, ex rugby player, so I you know, I
need something a little,
yeah. I mean, you know, one of the little tiny,
more torqueable,
yeah. Well, you know, they still sell Sansas. Lot of love on Amazon for Kowon's Plenu D, which I've never heard, that sells for about $189.
Oh, cool,
yeah, you know, but again, if you can. Get something that supports, you know, FLAC and WAVE and AFE and ALAC and APE and MP3 and WMA and OGG. But basically, strip everything to FLAC. You know,
yeah,
make
you
sure
are
it's got at least one, if not two, micro SD card slots.
Beauty with FLAC is, too, you can easily convert that into any other format you need.
Yeah.
So it's a lossless
Once it's
format.
Lossless, it's lossless. It doesn't matter if they call it a WAVE or a FLAC or whatever. But, yeah, and I got to say, like, I've been, you know, the Astell & Kern AK Junior reviews are not as solid as I think the AK100s were, but, you know, they're about 43% 5-star, 28% 4-star. Those are actually pretty good. It's one of those things where, like, you know, when you look at Amazon reviews, like 10%, 10% 1-star reviews will really slam the
you know, and half of those reviews had something to do with the shipment of it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even the item itself half the time. Yeah. So, or it arrived DOA, and it's like, well, maybe you should get one that works first. And then,
yeah.
And so, I will say, take it all with a grain of salt. Anybody's yeah. reviews. So,
and the first thing you're going to want to do when you get any portable audio player at this point is download and install the latest firmware.
Hopefully they're making that easier, especially if these are network connected devices in any way too, where they'll auto check. Yeah. But you know, got to take that one on a case by case basis and see.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, you know, it looks like Pioneer's Punkio's portable high resolution digital audio player. They've got one selling for about $300 now. There's a lot of options out there. Man. There's a lot of those. They get expensive really, really quickly, which is why I was so excited about that Kickstarter project last week.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, is a Kickstarter project, which means it's not going to be around for a long time. That Hit is the AP200.
Must be patient.
Man, they're up to $150,000 on their $12,000 goal. They doubled the number of backers since last week. You know, and like I said, it's, you know, when you're talking about $239 for an Android-based audio, portable audio player, that's a pretty fantastic deal. Of course, they have to ship it, but they're saying September 2017. In any case.
With that kind of funding, hopefully they'll get that first round out, no problem.
One would hope.
One would!
I'm going to ask you. The internet wants to know, people have been tweeting about it, have you watched John Wick and John Wick Chapter 2, Mr. Heron?
No. Oh. No, not yet. I would say the HDMI snafu really took me for a loop yesterday. I just couldn't figure out why all the ports on the TV stopped functioning, or why I couldn't switch anything. Nothing was being detected. It was
annoying. You've been a bad boy, Robert, and we're taking your ability to switch HDMI.
I almost had to fully factory reset the TV, and then I just took a deep breath, unplugged it like I mentioned before, and it's all better. I will say I am way sucked into Civ 6. That is cutting into my sleep. I must lay off that game a little bit.
That's the worst.
It is. It's the best. Oh, best and the worst. Otherwise, everything else is pretty smooth, I must say. Got some good calibration work coming up, and what else? Oh, I'm looking at some new software from SpectraCal this week, too.
Ooh.
Testing some beta stuff for doing not only Dolby Vision calibrations now, able to generate the proper calibration for that format without the need for what used to be called the golden reference value for a particular TV that Dolby used to have to generate. Now we can just physically measure the TVs and create that value that is applied to that content, making it look fantastic. So that's kind of nerdy, but something I'm looking forward to. Picked up a new dash cam with a GPS on it. I'll get that installed and check it out and see if it's worth even mentioning. But I'm all about the cheap dash cams, man. So the last one I had was like a 1080p 60, I think it is, with a SD card in it. And that thing worked great, and it was like $50. This one I spent about twice as much on because I wanted something that would hopefully set the freaking time automatically.
Uh-huh.
Every time I abandon my car for a few days, I come back, and it's like, oh, the clock's reset. It's, you know, January 2000, blah, blah, blah. All the files are pretty much the same date. Nothing. Anyway, I wanted something with an integrated auto update for time. And I was hoping somebody just had a simple design with using like the AM broadcast or the those time code broadcasts that all of the radio controlled clocks use and things like that. I figured that would be cheaper than having a GPS unit built into it. But for about $100, I found 80 to 120, depending on which specific version you buy. I found a series of these dash cams that do include the GPS receiver, and apparently it will. It better be able to grab the time off that code, because that's GPS is time. So I'm looking forward to checking that out, and I'll give a report back after I get it all wired up and put to good use.
Oh my goodness. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we want to remind you, you can support us. You can help make the podcast possible. Go to patreon.com/AVXL and just give a little something. At the higher levels, you actually get to hang out with Robert and I on a monthly hangouts.
Heck yeah.
And
that's fun. And the last one was great. We just chatted up what people were doing, if they had any specific questions. It was just kind of a free-for-all. It was good times.
Good times. Yeah, we should have our next one, I think, next weekend.
Okay.
Yeah.
That works.
I was going to make sure it's after I'm back from camp.
I'll be traveling the end of the month, but I will bring the appropriate electronics with me.
We are sending a headset and a USB analog to digital converter with you on the road. Ladies and gentlemen, ask at avxl.com
Do
is
it.
The place to contact us, or at Robert Heron or at Patrick Norton on the Twitters, or at AVXL if you want to give at AVXL some love. And we will catch up with you next week. Keep sending out your questions, and go make your audio and visual experience excellent.